Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Vanishing is one of the longest cons of all. And it's different because instead of someone trying to con you, you're trying to con everyone else in the world. Now, we've talked about people who go voluntarily missing and aren't trying to escape the law or legal obligations. But today we're going to violate that rule and talk about people who try to fake their death in an effort to con someone else.
I always classify it as like an act of stupidity. I mean, it's really the dumbest thing you could do in the whole sphere of disappearing. There's no body left behind. And, you know, 15 years ago, you could get away with it. But like after John Darwin in the UK did it, law enforcement is just hip to it. It's just not a smart thing to do. Because what happens is not only do you have law enforcement looking for you, but, you know, you could become the next media sensation and then everybody's looking for you.
That's Frank Ahern, a former skip tracer, consultant, and the author of several books on how to disappear. And you know where he stands on that issue. If someone fakes their death, it's usually to escape something. A failing business, financial problems, or some other thing in life that seems unbearable. Those who want to simply vanish usually do some planning, but those who want to fake their death typically do so with short notice. I'm Jim Grinstead, and today we're going to talk about faking death. And as Frank Ahern told us earlier, it's one of the dumbest things you can do.
A Rhode Island man, authorities say, faked his own death, was apprehended alive in Scotland.
What officers found was a pathological liar who may have cultivated up to a dozen different aliases. Pseudocide is the snappy name for the art of faking your own death. It's an idea that's been around for a very long time. After all, it's the most eye-catching means of escaping the baggage of your dead-end existence and striking out into a new one.
It's kind of the ultimate fantasy in the sense that in this life, we would be able to leave behind the mistakes and mundanity and tedium of daily life and be reborn.
The number one cause of failure for any faked death is a lack of preparation. For many, it represents something of an impulse decision. Something has gone wrong, and this very specific, drastic course of evasive action has come to seem like the only way to solve it. Desperation, after all, makes people do strange things. White-collar criminals make for enthusiastic pseudocides.
That's from the Vice program, The Business of Crime. And that summation is common in the research I've done and the people I've spoken with. Let's take the case of Julie Weaver. She was handed a federal prison sentence of 42 months for healthcare fraud. After her prison term, Wheeler will be under supervised release for 3 years. She's also been ordered to pay restitution totaling $289,000, as determined by the Veterans Administration and approved by the court. In May 2020, Wheeler, along with family members, staged her fall from the Grandview State Park overlook. They then falsely reported her plunge off Grandview ledges, triggering a massive search operation involving state, federal, and local authorities, along with numerous volunteers. Eventually, the West Virginia State Police found Wheeler hiding in a closet at her own home. She and her husband are currently facing charges in Raleigh County Magistrate Court for multiple felony and misdemeanor offenses related to this false emergency report. Ahern said lots of people use water in order to fake their death, believing that police will assume the body is washed away and won't be found.
Actually, there is a case, if I'm correct, in Australia, where they had a leg that was bit by a shark or something like that, and they tried to use the leg as the guy's body, but they figured it out through DNA, pretty much. There's also another interesting case, too. I forget where it was. A lot of times, individuals will fake their death overseas because it's easier to get like a death certificate signed off. But the insurance companies, you know, they're aware of it. And what they did in this one case, they just didn't believe it, but they had the guy's death certificate. And so they had fingerprints taken on the death certificate. And ironically, the dead guy's fingerprint was on the death certificate. So, I mean, you know, I always look at it from the perspective, people who investigate for a living, that's what they do, you know, and they're tenacious and they want to solve that case. And you can't make any mistakes. And they just plug along and they find that thing on you. Right. And you know what it is? It's just some guy who sits there and says, hey, let's check the fingerprints on this. I mean, who would think about that? I would never think about doing something like that.
I'm a summer guy. I'll be on the porch, enjoying a cool drink and reading. Doesn't get any better. Unless someone else does the cooking. I'm not going to spend the day in fresh air only to eat processed foods. If I'm not eating fresh, I'm wasting one of the best seasons of the year. Fortunately, Factor comes to my rescue. They send fresh meals to me that can be cooked up in minutes. I can go back to the porch with a great meal and enjoy the sunset. I'm not into programmed diets. I like the chef's choice meals, but if I wanted keto, protein, vegan, or anything else, they can provide it. Premium meals could include steak, shrimp, broccolini, or asparagus. The meals come prepped and are customizable. You can get add-ons for breakfast, lunch, or snacks. And when I head out on vacation, Factor will pause my service until I get back. Plus, I love to grill, so I can choose one of Factor's meals during the week and fire up the charcoal on weekends. Be good to yourself. Enjoy the warm weather, great foods from Factor, along with some money-saving discounts I'm about to tell you about. Head to factormeals.com/scamsandcons50 and use code scamsandcons50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code scamsandcons50 at factormeals.com/scamsandcons50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Faking a death is rarely thought out, but sometimes an event happens, an opportunity is presented, and someone makes an instant decision. One of those times was on September 11, 2001, when the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center were targets of a terrorist attack. About a year after the attacks, the New York Times looked into how many fake insurance claims were made by people saying they had lost family members in the attack. Here's AI voice Brian reading from the Times article.
When a federal judge recently sentenced Aubrey Lee Price to 30 years in prison for bank fraud, embezzlement, and other crimes, it closed a chapter on the once successful businessman's sensational criminal saga. Price went from a devout Christian minister and trusted financial advisor to a schemer who wiped out many of his clients' life savings and then faked his own death to avoid taking responsibility for what he had done. When a routine traffic stop in Georgia resulted in his arrest nearly 18 months after his disappearance, Price acknowledged that he had become a drug dealer. "It's unbelievably sad," said Special Agent Ed Sutcliffe in our Atlanta field office. Most of Price's victims had worked 30 or 40 years to save for retirement. "They were living off those funds," said Sutcliffe. "They had to learn from us that Price, their friend and advisor, was missing and all their money was gone." Price told investigators he got involved in the investment business to help fund his mission efforts overseas. He worked for two well-known investment firms and later started his own company. Many of his clients were personal friends from Georgia, where Price lived. Some knew him from church. He gave seminars on how to be a wise Christian investor. Others had been on mission trips with him. Everyone believed Price was on the up and up, Sutcliffe said. He had investors, a solid track record, and there was no reason to doubt his ability or his honesty. He eventually gained access to more than $21 million and lost more than $16 million through risky investments. In the end, Price's deception of more than $70 million. In 2012, when he knew his house of financial cards was about to crumble, Price faked his suicide on a boat in Key West, Florida, and fled first to Mexico and later to Florida, where he grew and sold marijuana and other drugs, and sometimes served as a bodyguard for prostitutes.
A Milwaukee woman also failed to fake her death during the 9/11 tragedy. Dorothy Johnson and her daughter Twilla McKee were charged with insurance fraud and attempted theft, claiming that Johnson had died in the World Trade Center attacks. The mother and daughter submitted two life insurance claims totaling $135,000, with McKee listed as the beneficiary on both policies. The scheme was uncovered due to two mistakes. Johnson's thumbprint was found on a letter to Conseco Direct Life Insurance Company, and she also filed an insurance claim for a car accident that occurred 12 days after the alleged date of her death. Damn fingerprints. Another not-so-clever attempt was made in 2009 by Marcus Schrenker. The Indiana money manager was facing financial difficulties and multiple lawsuits. He took off in a small plane, telling air traffic controllers that his windshield had shattered and he was injured. Schrecker later confessed that he set the plane on autopilot, parachuted over the Gulf of Mexico, hoping the plane would crash at sea to fake his death. However, the plane ran out of fuel and crashed near Milton, Florida. He was discovered by authorities at a campground 2 days later. Perhaps one of the most famous cases of faking death goes to John Darwin. Darwin was a British teacher and prison officer. He was thought to have died in a canoeing accident in 2002. He was reported missing after failing to report for work. A large-scale sea search turned up the wreckage of his canoe, but not his body. In December 2007, Darwin walked into a police station in London, claiming to have no memory of the past 5 years. His wife, Anne, who had sold her properties in England and moved to Panama 3 months earlier, acted surprised at his return. In fact, Darwin had been living with her since just days after his disappearance. He'd also traveled to Panama with her in 2006, as evidenced by a photo of the couple posted to a website. Both John and Anne were convicted of fraud in 2008. John was sentenced to 6 years and 3 months in prison. Anne was sentenced to 6 years and 6 months. Perhaps the person who knows the most about how to fake your death is Elizabeth Greenwood, who researched the process and wrote a book about what she learned. She came just one step away from becoming legally dead.
I did manage to get my own death certificate in Manila. I had heard the Philippines mentioned time and again in my research and reporting as kind of a place that's a real hotbed where these overseas death frauds, usually for life insurance purposes, will take place. You can purchase something there called a death kit, which has everything you need, soup to nuts, to fake a death. Your death certificate, witness statements, police statements. You can hire mourners for your fake funeral to weep over your coffin. There are black market morgues in the Philippines where you can purchase a body to cremate immediately and try to pass off as yourself. So I knew that this was a place I had to visit. After my journey into the world of death fraud for 6 years of research and reporting, speaking to people who had done it themselves, speaking to family members who were affected, who either had thought a loved one or parent had died and turned out they weren't. And after handling my own death certificate in my hands, I can confidently say faking your death is probably not the greatest idea unless you have a seriously good motive, which I have yet to find. If you had just spent the same amount of effort in your first life making that as great and as rich as you could, you'd be so much happier than you are now. So I'd say don't fake your death. I don't think there's any harm in a little fantasy, though.
Greenwood was aided at her search by Frank Ahern, whom you heard from earlier.
Something is creeping, don't follow it down.
Let me introduce you to Barry Clue, an authorised financial advisor from New Zealand and a very special kind of stain on humanity.
He was a very knowledgeable young guy.
He was a registered financial advisor.
Type of guy that was bending over backwards to help you.
Now, you could be forgiven for thinking that Barry sounds like a great guy, and you'd be right. Well, right up until the point when you're wrong.
It was all fictitious.
You stole from my son, who has a disability.
Chris never knew. He died believing that we're all taken care of.
A psychopath is somebody who lacks empathy, acts impulsively. I think there's a strong case that Barry might be all of those things, actually.
To find out how Barry Clue stole over $15 million from 81 victims, subscribe to Clueless, The Long Con. That's Clueless, spelt K-L-O-O-G-H-L-E-S-S.
I've just told you about how people make stupid mistakes when trying to fake their deaths, making it fairly easy for the police to catch on.
It's kind of easy, and it's kind of standard, because if you look at when somebody disappears, especially when they fake their death, if you look at like the 5 days prior or like the week prior, they do things. They, you know, whether it be, you know, transfer funds, pull out cash, get extra medicine, they kind of take care of business in their life. It's a big mistake because, you know, I've worked on some cases where people fake their death, and one guy, some wealthy guy, supposedly fell off of a boat. But, you know, ironically, he went to visit his mother like 2 days before, but he hasn't seen her in a year, you know, and he had some medical issue that he actually requested his medical file from a doctor. So, I mean, there are things like this that people do that they just don't realize that, you know, law enforcement or a private investigator who's investigating the insurance case is going to look into.
Then there's Margaret Sweeney, who was reported to be dead on a Friday night, but police picked her up the next day. One of her friends told the Franklin, North Carolina Police Department that she was either going to be killed or was already dead. She was found alive the next day in a neighboring town after police simply pinged her phone. Then there was a woman who didn't fake her death. She faked a life. Andy Schmid is a photographer and came to New York to study. During her time in the city, she noticed the skyscrapers where the rich and famous live. She wondered what the city must look like from those balconies for people to pay millions of dollars for that view. So she pretended to be a billionaire looking for a place to live. She told her story to Vice.
The cheapest property I've been to was $10 million, and the most expensive was $85 million. They manipulate the cities to the disadvantage of everyone else in the cities. My name is Andy Schmid, and in 2016, I spent 3 months in New York at an artist residency program. Basically, this whole idea started with the biggest cliche that I went up to the Empire State Building, and I saw the views, and I basically realized that there are lots of buildings that are as tall or even taller than the Empire State Building. And I just basically was really curious about what the view from those buildings looked like. That's when I started to work on my book and my project. I chose 25 buildings, high, ultra luxury towers.
But you don't just walk into those penthouses as you might in suburbia. She needed help. And she found it in a real estate agent.
My goal was really to show those views that are considered to be the best views you can privately own in New York. First, I really just wanted to photograph the views for the book. As I was going deeper and deeper in this world, it became more and more obvious that it's like something totally bizarre and crazy. I was like, laying in bed. And really, I was just thinking, how could I get in those buildings? I remember I told about the project to the curator who was working at the residency, and she told me, no way they would ever let you in without a credit check. The only way for that is to pretend to be a billionaire who is searching for an apartment. From the moment on that I started to work on the project, this was pretty much the only thing I could think about. Write it down, check the address, go home, check if there's any real estate available, call the agency, and usually next day, go and see it and take a picture of the view. And so really for 3 months, I was living in between this Gabriella, which was my billionaire persona, and myself back and forth on the A-line from Brooklyn to Manhattan.
My name is Daniel Rosenstein. I've worked in real estate for 4 years. I met Andy 2 years ago when she was infiltrating New York's most exclusive properties. I was doing Airbnb in my apartment in the Upper West Side.
And first, I remember that he asked me, what are you doing in New York? And when he said he's a real estate agent, I was actually a bit hesitant to tell him what I came here for.
She, you know, told me that she was making a book. So I think at first I was like, oh, is she mocking our profession? I'm just a pawn in your project, dear. And then the more she was talking about it, the more I saw her point of view, which is almost nobody has access to these apartments. You have to go through a doorman. You have to reach out to a real estate agent. It's not a normal real estate market where you can show up to an open house. She asked a few questions, I think, how to navigate getting into buildings. I told her to use the term, we're looking for a pied-à-terre or second home in the city. A lot of really wealthy people look for second, third, fourth, fifth homes. And she, at that point, had essentially created her whole persona.
Gabriella is my actual middle name because at the beginning, I didn't know if they would check my passport ever. And actually, at some of the properties, they did check it. And I remember back then, I got really obsessed by many of these small details that I need to do my nails and I need to have proper shoes, proper bag. In order to do this project, I needed to bring my camera and photograph the view. This made me obviously very unusual in the eyes of the agents. But I also realized that the stranger I act, the more convincing it is that I'm actually a billionaire and I just don't give a shit. I was really, really nervous at this very first viewing. The agent started to ask me if I have a chef, if I have a nanny, if we have private chauffeur. So I just randomly answered yes and no. And all of these answers kind of became part of what Gabriella was.
As she worked, she also thought about poverty, the people who were looked down upon.
I think the way poverty is usually portrayed is from the bottom. So talk about homelessness or you talk about people who cannot afford housing. I think when you see it from this like very top of the sphere, it somehow is also very telling. The buildings that you can see from every single corner of the city are these ultra-luxury real estate, which are not accessible for anyone really. Apartments and buildings are standing 60 to 70% empty.
She also realized that these palaces were cold. They weren't purchased as a place to live.
Then you would have the oak floor, which is always the best type of oak floor. And there's like really nothing that would make any of these buildings stand out, to be honest. But it's not really surprising when you realize that it's solely a form of investment, most of the cases. So it's really not about living and it's not about having a soul. And it shows. It's really obvious when you are there. One of the most striking things was how agents are trying to always go out of their way to tell me that no one else lives in these buildings, that I'm not going to have any neighbors.
A lot of these billionaire row towers are investments for overseas and local people. So they'll rent them out or they'll just own them, have them sit empty for a number of years and resell them. It's a safe investment. It holds value over time. But what that translates to is buildings sitting empty. There's a trickle-down effect. So once the hyper-expensive properties become even more expensive, it raises the value of everything else beneath it.
Gabriella knew she could walk away from this imaginary life. She wouldn't live on the streets. She would have a comfortable life. She wouldn't have to fake her death. She only had to give up a fake life. But those who fake their death generally do so out of fear or greed, and emotionally they feel trapped. So we end where we began, with Frank Ahern. This is his viewpoint on why people choose to fake their deaths.
And it's almost a cathartic thing, and most people who contact me are never going to disappear. And I pretty much tell them that, you know, just because you think you should doesn't mean you should. It's a large fantasy for people. Most of us have been in situations where life was hard at some point. And the idea of just like, you know, driving into the sunset just sounds really cool. And it sounds exotic.
If you enjoy the show, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you listen. You hear this all the time on other podcasts because it helps people find us and become subscribers. Your ratings really do make a difference. Thanks for listening.
Scams and Cons is a member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence. And give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.